Welcome to the Get Balanced Podcast with Dr. Donnie. If you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or emergency medical professional who would like to improve your family relationships, your physical and mental health, and want to have success at work and at home, well, this show is for you. Welcome to the Get Balanced program. Let's get started.
Welcome to the Get Balanced program. I am Dr. Donnie, your host, and my special guest today, and wow, what a privilege it is to have Chief Neil Gang from the Pinole Police Department. And something that I'm definitely going to ask you about, Chief, is the 2020 U.S. House of Representatives Award that you received this year. And I know you wear many hats, from Cortico Advisory Board to, you know, all the different associations that you're involved in. But if you would, let's start off talking a little bit about your background and then we'll go from there.
Yeah. Well, first of all, Dr. Donnie, I just want to thank you for inviting me to be your guest today, and love the work that you're doing. And I can tell you, I'm speaking for a law enforcement profession, and thank you so much for all the work you're doing for our profession. And it's so needed right now. And just a pleasure to be here. I'm very blessed to be here. I think we share many of the same foundational beliefs, where faith, family, and friends. So I'm glad that I got a chance to spend some time with you today, brother.
Oh, absolutely. Well, thank you. I appreciate the compliments. And absolutely, faith, family, and friends, and career, everything.
Yeah, absolutely. So I got in law enforcement back in the late 80s, 1988. So I've been doing this for over 32 years now, and I've been really blessed by different opportunities. I started out up in New Jersey, and then went down to South Florida and spent some time in Pembroke Pines, which is right outside the Fort Lauderdale-Hollywood area. Spent a decade there and did some really, really good things there in law enforcement. And then had an opportunity to go out to Surprise, Arizona, where I think you know some people out that way. Yes. Iva, doing some great work with the 100 Club over there.
That's where I first met you, actually. It was in, I met you on old North Cave Creek Road. You pulled me over one time doing 95, right outside the 101.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I used to live in Cave Creek for a year and a half. Same time you were in Surprise, Arizona.
Yep. Very good.
Yeah. Little neighboring town.
About 7 years ago, I had an opportunity to come over to Pinole, California, and many people are asking where that is. Well, it's in the Bay Area, so just a little bit outside of San Francisco. And if you're wondering where that is, that's the same thing I did when I saw the application process. So I had no idea, never been to Pinole. I didn't have any friends out here, but like many of us do, prayed a lot about the opportunity and came over here as a number two, as a commander at the Pinole Police Department. And within several months, I became the chief out here. And that was what the goal was, to come out, learn a little bit at the number two position, then take over as the chief. So here I am, and doing some great things here. Certainly have changed, came into a position where just legacy systems, a little antiquated, and we've been really doing a great job out here. The men and women, the Pinole Police Department are embracing change and innovation and progressiveness. So it's a great opportunity for me. It's been a great platform for me as well.
Outstanding. Could you tell us a little bit about maybe some of the advisory boards that you're on, as well as that? I'm not going to let you go without the House of Representatives Award.
Yeah, that's always the most difficult part, is talking about the recognitions you receive.
Sure.
Especially when you come from a humble foundation. No, I'm proud of some of the boards that I sit on right now. We just started out the California Police Chiefs Association, just started a standalone Officer Wellness and Resiliency Committee. So I was just appointed the chair of that committee, which is a tremendous blessing, number one, but number two, it's a lot of work. And California has a lot of chiefs, and we're trying to present a best in practice platforms for them to utilize and get us through this, really, really challenging season that we find ourselves in 2020. I also sit on the Cortico Advisory Board, working really closely with Dr. David Black, helping with their Cortico Shield wellness app that they have, coordinating with them, training with them, and doing some things with them as well. And then I sit on First Responder DECON, which is a group out of actually Arizona. Sergeant Greg Welch is part of that. And what they do is they respond resources for DECON, especially during the COVID situation. So first responders have the ability to actually DECON themselves when they're out on scenes and when they see an exposure. So those are some of the things that are I've been busy doing, but it's great work. And like I said, challenging, but very rewarding work.
That's wonderful. And it does sound like you have your plate full. And after all, this is the Get Balanced program. So you know where I'm going with all this.
Yes, of course I do. First, but I have some good things to share.
First, I have to load your plate up real full and let the listeners get an idea that you're just not working part time, right?
Yes.
How about sharing a little bit about other hats that you wear outside of your professional role?
Yeah, so it's very interesting. We run a rescue ranch up in Vacaville, California. So what's interesting is rescue ranch being animals right now, but what we're doing is we're transitioning into using that into PTSD equine therapy. And we're starting a program there, and we're trying to find some partners right now to start a PTSD for first responders to come out to the ranch, spend time with the horses, and actually go through an equine therapy to help them through PTSD. So rescue meaning animals and human beings. So that's something that we're kicking off. I would imagine in the next couple of weeks, we're starting that. The other hat is also starting a podcast starting in November, which I'm hoping to have you on. So this is your invite. It's called the Sixth Pillar Podcast. And the sixth pillar being the sixth pillar of Obama's 21st century policing model. And if you know something about that, the sixth pillar is officer wellness and resiliency. So we named it after that. So we're looking to have guests on to talk about and to raise awareness for first responder suicide. And hopefully we'll have some guests on there and people could have some takeaways to change some outcomes that we're seeing. Because as you know, that's a very large epidemic now that we're facing.
Oh, it certainly is. And actually, why don't you share with our listeners a little bit, if it's on the top of your head, some of the statistics of suicide and ones that we know of, right?
Yeah, so I'll share with you. So in 2019, there was 228 officers that died by their own hand. So it sounds alarming, but when you put in some other factors to that, it's even more alarming. And what it is that it's almost double the number of all other line of duty deaths combined. So, you know, we see in the news of officers getting shot, car accidents, maybe heart attacks. So you take all those that occur, we're still almost losing double the amount of officers by their own hand. And to me, what's even more alarming, where I say it's an epidemic, is the fact that the experts are saying that it's underreported by a factor of 2.5.
Wow.
So think about it. That number of 228 could easily be over 500.
Yeah.
And then the other thing to factor in, Donnie, is that we're not counting, you know, retirees. We're not counting support staff like dispatchers, crime scene techs, all those type of things. These are just sworn officers. Hmm. So, and there's no national database for this. So Blue Help and Karen Solomon, I'm sure you know her. They're really the center point of collecting that data. So it's a good thing that they are proactive with that. Hopefully we'll get into an area where nationally we'll find a database to be able to collect that data. So even 228 is too many. So can you imagine 500?
Right. And this year, I think, I'm not 100% accurate, but are the numbers climbing in 2020?
They are. I think as of the last webinar I did was a week ago, and the numbers were like 125, 126. So I haven't checked it recently, only because, you know, I mean, obviously they're going to continue to increase. And then I also think they're going to increase by the end of the year, because I think 2020 is really taking its toll with everybody. You know, yeah. We got the global pandemic that's affecting everybody. And then not just that, now you've got civil unrest, you know, and looting and riots and all those things that are going on. So I think what most officers do is, like, we know they mask when they're at work. So they know there's a call for service right now. But when this lull comes after all this, I think you're going to see a lot of numbers will increase, which is going to be unfortunate.
I agree. I agree. And we try to do everything we can, try to mitigate that, obviously.
Yes.
Chief, you mentioned we started a rescue ranch. Who's we?
My fiance and I.
Okay.
She is in law enforcement, and we bought a ranch a couple of years ago, and our hope was to rescue some animals. And if you know anything about Northern California, there's something called wildfires here that occur every single summer.
Yeah.
And we are available to rescue animals that have been displaced from the fire, and people that unfortunately have lost their homes and unable to take care of their animals anymore.
Oh, I see. I see. And then any children?
I do. Yeah. I have a daughter who's out in North Carolina, and she's 24 years old, and she's actually a flight attendant. So she's doing really, really well out there. And then I have my son who is going to be 18 next week, who's a senior in high school and will be graduating, and actually is a real interest in getting into law enforcement, and just has a zest for vehicles and cars, and he's into drifting and all those things that I have no idea about.
Now, is your son out there with you?
He is. Yes. Yeah. So I've been a single father since my son was 4, my daughter was 10. It was just the three of us. And so things were really, really hectic for a while, but as they grew older, things got easier, obviously. But trying to, you know about work-life balance, try and manage working full-time as a police officer, managing the two kids. And then at that time, at night, at 2-3 in the morning, going online to finish my degree. So yeah. Talk about work-life balance. You would have really had a field day with me a couple of years ago.
No, I get it. Work-life balance ebbs and flows. And I was, 32 years old, getting my MBA, Monday evenings, 6 to 10 in the classroom. But then Thursday, Friday, Saturday night, it seemed like my kids were small. They were young at the time, 10 to newborn. And it seemed like most nights between 10 a.m. or 10 p.m. and 2 a.m., I was reading and writing, at least 3-4 nights a week, it seemed like. But I knew, I told myself, I'm going out of balance for this period of time. And that was something I chose to give up on sleep. That was the choice, like what you're saying, that those late nights, we all have choices, and sometimes we, that actually sort of takes, gets into where I go with work-life balance is that, I'll share with the listeners and you, just my research definition of work-life balance is that it's more in the form of a question. And I ask the question is, are your day-to-day behaviors in alignment with your priorities in life? And, and that's where, like, we're talking about, those times and where, and I, after I got my MBA, a little bit later, then I was a single father for a couple years with my 4 kids. And then I remarried. And, but as a lot of people probably realize, when you remarry, that parental responsibility for your own children really is, it doesn't go to a 50-50 split,
right?
It's more like a 90-10. And so I've always been a father and like that. But when we think about work-life balance in that context, like, our day-to-day behaviors in alignment with our priorities in life, can you talk a little bit, maybe even about your past, some chief, is that, where did you find success in that balance? Where did you, sometimes at the end of the week or something like that, said, wow, I'm feeling pretty good about the single father thing,
Yeah. So I think for me, it's really been that family's always been a priority for me. That has always been a commitment that I've made. I certainly knew, once I got into law enforcement, that this is something that was going to be a part of who I am, but it's not who I am. And it's really, really important to realize that, the badge is something I wear. It's not something who I am. And I think that people have to understand that. And I think it's really hard to separate the human behind the badge type of theory that people talk about. But it was so important. So family has always been a priority for me, Dr. Donnie. In fact, it took me a long time to rise up some of the ranks because I prioritized my family before I prioritized a degree. I had certain leaders in police organizations which refused to promote anybody without a degree. Well, you know what? I got my degree when I was 48 years old. So it was going online and taking one class at a time. So, yeah. And again, like what you said, you know, you prioritize your family. That was number one. You know, it was always faith and family. And then after that was what was important. And, you know, certainly getting my degree was important, but not as important as the family. But like you said, you sacrifice in certain areas so you're able to obtain those goals that you want to obtain. And again, that's kind of where I've, that's kind of how I focused my entire life and my entire career.
Yeah. Hey, Chief. And before I move on, let me go back just a little bit, if you could, because in you talked about the badge is not who you are. It's your job, but it's not who you are. Go a little bit deeper in that, if you will, just because as we know, it's a lot of times people identify with their careers. Hey, you know, or people ask you, you know, hey, who's this? Oh, that's my attorney. That's my doctor. That's the police chief. You know, we all, regardless of professions, we are that profession a lot of times, right? A lot of people identify with that title, but how do you get into really understanding who you are?
Well, I think that comes with having interests and hobbies outside of policing. I learned a long time ago, and I don't remember who told me this, but you know, don't get caught up in that fishbowl. So, you know, certainly at a young age, when I say young age, and I'm talking about young age in law enforcement, you know, I didn't socialize with officers outside of work. I wasn't in an environment where it was just a bunch of police officers. You know, I'm not somebody who indulges in alcohol beverages. And that was always something that was in law enforcement. I was always somebody who was into bodybuilding. In fact, I competed in natural bodybuilding shows back in the day. So, you know, for me, it was always, I had to get up early and I had to eat right. And I didn't take alcohol as a vice to relieve stress or anxiety. I used working out and I used physical fitness as my vice per se. So when I say that human behind a badge, I think people forget that, you know, this is what we do for a living. You know, we do this for 12 hours a day. And yes, are we always on 24/7? Of course. But the bottom line is we do have other aspects to who we are, other elements and ever components. And what I mean by that is that, you know, officers are susceptible to all the other life challenges, right? You know, financial problems, addiction problems, you know, a lot of people have relationship issues. So it's just so much more to understand that we don't just get wound up and put out onto the streets. You know, there's a lot behind, a lot more dynamics behind the people that are out there wearing that badge and that firearm.
Yes, certainly are. And I'll have to share with you no one knows this secret. I was Mr. Southwest Ohio at 16 years old.
Wow.
How about that?
And you know that after this show that you're going to have to send some photographs of that because I'm going to need to see that.
Yeah.
And I don't think people understand the dedication it takes just to be able to even get on a stage. You know, so, I know we're not going to turn this program into Bodybuilding 101, but yeah, it takes a lot of dedication. And, you know, my love for working out and physical fitness started because I read your bio. So I know that you played college football as well. And it really started back at, you know, the teenager years where football was really my motivating factor until the injury occurred. But yeah, so that's, you know, there's a lot of dedication that comes with that.
There certainly is. Life, great lessons. And, you know, that's another component of my research, Chief, in work-life balance is that in my doctoral work, my dissertation, you know, the huge study that I did just in 2018 published, I examined how did self-care contribute to authentic leaders' work-life balance. And I define self-care in this study as our physical care, diet, exercise, sleep, you know, basic stuff, psychological care, social, and spiritual. So those four elements, universal, you know, all humans have a need for some component, you know, of each one of those. And what I did is I researched, well, you know, these people say they're really balanced and they're very effective at work and very effective in their home life. What's the secret, right? And the secret was, is that they put their self-care first. They would just intentionally plan, okay, it's Sunday night. What am I having for lunch at work? When am I exercising? They had a prayer routine. They had a social routine with friends outside of work, you know, that they would contact, but they were just meticulous on intentionally planning to meet their self-care needs. And then what they all independently, five people just said, everything else just falls into place. You know, did you find a little bit of that about, you know, and I know, you know, with your athleticism and everything like that, that exercise, but how that positively contributes to your work, to your social life, to your family, to being a father? Do you make that connection yourself?
Yeah, I think that that study that you did, or your research that you did, is so true. I think when you are able to have that mindset, if you will, where you are planning, you know, where things aren't coming up on you, to it just helps you guide and focus your intention. So it's an intentional living, right?
Yeah.
And ooh, I think I like without that. without having the faith background and the faith foundation, that makes it difficult. But I think that when you mm-hmm. realize that you can't control everything and only need to get invested in the things you can control, it makes life so much easier for me. And it makes a different perspective for myself. But I certainly do think that having the structure of, you know, organized sports like we did, you and I both, or physical fitness the way we did, it certainly helps where you can translate that mindset into the rest of your life. And I think that's really been a huge benefit for myself.
Yeah. Now, do you still, how do you take care of your physical needs now, your exercise and you know, how do you plan that out in your day and how does that work for you?
Yeah. So it figures that I would talk to you. I don't know if you ever heard of the Gordon Graham talks about the Eustas. Well, I had a bunch of Eustas and it's been a little while since I've been in the gym. I had some health issues that I need to take care of. And right now I have some physical ailments, you know, knees and stuff like that from all the years of playing sports. So my traditional, you know, working out with weights, that's kind of been adjusted, but out on the ranch, it's something, you know, I call farm fit, you know, yes. Where you're moving bales of hay and you're moving feed and you're moving animals around. And so I stay fit that way. And then of course, cardio with biking and using cardio type of activities there, hikes and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me take you down, shift subjects on you a little bit, or just degrees. Is that, can you take me down a path in your life, if there happened to be one, maybe not, but a time when you felt that maybe you were out of balance? And how do you think you got out of balance, if that has ever happened to you?
Yeah, you know, thinking back, I think I was probably out of balance at the time, the height in time where I was so pressured into getting my degree. And, you know, working and then being a father full time, there was just a lot going on at that time. And I think I didn't focus as much time on family at that time in my life as I needed to. And I think that just affected the overall balance, in that I was so focused on hearing the word that you are no longer going to be able to promote any higher until you have a degree, and that pressure to be able to get that degree. And, you know, certainly as a police chief, I certainly respect and understand people's needs to have an education, but I don't think I would ever use the verbiage that you are not going to get something because you don't have something. Right. Because there are plenty of people out there that are in a field where they cannot maybe follow their dream of getting a degree, but they're so intelligent and they have so many things to give, that to hold them back because they don't have a piece of paper on the wall is really the, I think personally, the wrong trajectory.
Mm-hmm. No, I know what you mean. And then when you finished your degree, did you find yourself sort of, it was easy to get back into a feeling of balance?
Actually, I did. I felt the pressure alleviate, and you'd be surprised, Donnie, and we could probably talk offline, but it was so funny how the minute I had that piece of paper, how much more qualified I was for jobs that, you know, that I was looking for. And you know, what's funny about that is the classes that I need to finish were like, you know, algebra one, you know, so, you know, being a lieutenant without having my algebra one certification wouldn't make me eligible to be a police chief. But the minute I got that algebra one certification and that test was done, boy, doors were swinging open. So it was very, very interesting for me. And it really taught me a lot about perspectives.
Yes. Yes. And then Neil, were you with the two children, were you ever married?
Yes, I was married to their mother. We were married for about 6 years. And then we just, we grew in different ways, and it was just time to move in different directions. She did have some alcohol addiction type of issues that crept into the marriage and caused an issue. And I really, there were so many things that I wanted to do, and it was just really, I felt a little bit of an anchor holding me back. And I think she's a good person and I wish her well, but it just wasn't right for me and wasn't the right person to be in my life at the time.
Yes. Yeah. And then what are some of the things you enjoyed most about being a father? And you're still a father, you know, but, you know, taking back when the kids were a little bit little, or, you know, when you were a little bit more hands-on, you know, type of.
Yeah. I think they're the same for today. It's just that enjoyment when you see them smile, just because of you're the dad, and it's not because of anything you're doing for them. Yeah. It's just that special moment when, you know, you just brighten their day just by your presence alone. And, you know, there's no aha moment where I could say, you know, this is what it was. It was just those little quiet times where it was just the three of us that really, really, really made me feel the most and made me feel probably the most effective as a father. And then, of course, later on, years later, getting letters from my daughter saying, thank you so much for all you've done for me, Dad. And thank you so much for being the dad you've been. And really, that's what it's all about, right?
Oh,
humble,
yeah.
Servants and really here just to serve our kids.
Yes, yes. Those letters are wonderful. I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, yeah. My kids have something going on the last couple of years. They keep, for my birthday and for Father's Day, they keep trying to outdo each other, right? they're like, let's see who can get Dad to tear up. You know, with the letters.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, and I'm an emotional guy. I mean, I'll admit it, but yeah, just you know, even just saying goodbye to them when you have to leave at certain times, it makes me tear up. And certainly knowing that they're successful and they're happy is that's everything to me. Take away all the other successes when it comes to career, I would definitely say that it's the family and watching their success and their happiness is really what's my number one.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you mentioned faith and family, and if I were to ask you, what are your guiding principles in life? I think those are two components right there, right? But where did they come from?
You know, I didn't grow up in a faith-filled family. I think a lot of it really just came out of maybe need at the time, you know, needing to know that there's something out there a little bit more than just what we see on a day-to-day basis. And when you say, you know, foundational beliefs, it's love God and love people, right?
Yeah.
I even use that in leadership, because if you're a leader in an organization or just a leader in anything that you're doing, you have to love your people. And the minute you commit to that, it changes your perspectives on life and it changes your perspectives on how you're going to lead people. So going back to the faith, it was funny. It was a little bit later on in my life where I actually became a believer, and it was funny. I was working off duty jobs at the church, and I was, you know, just working overtime shifts and usually during the holidays. And I would creep in to listen to the sermon, and, I still have a great respect for his name is Pastor Lee McFarland. He's down in Southern California now, and he would him and I would talk, and he would just say, hey, anything you need, and And here I am just working security, and I was getting drawn in. And finally I sat down with him and really started to learning what being a faith follower was all about and what a believer was all about. And really he's still to my day, a great friend, and we keep in touch, and a guy that really brought me to the Lord, and actually he baptized me. So that's, we have a great relationship at this point still.
That is wonderful to hear. Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. So that without the job, I don't know where I would have been. So the job had led me there. And again, I'm not a believer in circumstance. I'm not a believer in coincidences. I believe that there's a path, and that path led me to be a faith follower, and a very, very strong faith follower, I might add.
I can relate. I don't know how my paths are crossing with people like you, but seems like someone's falling in my path all the time now. And I get to share stories and learn about stories and everything. It's been a great journey. You know, I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, it's amazing when you really sit back and think about it. And I pray this prayer every morning. I pray that the Lord makes me an empty vessel, and he hollows me out of things that are in the way of what his purpose is for me. And I ask that he breathe into me so much more than I could ever do myself, that others can see him through me and my actions. And that's how I live my life every day.
Yeah. Now, for some of the listeners too, Chief, is that they may be trying to figure out, and they have a passion for faith, and you know they really want to do it, but sometimes they might be somewhat hesitant about, well, how do you display that as a leader? How do you show that as a leader in your organization without getting, quote, officials upset or something like that?
Yeah, that's never been a concern for me. I think you show it in your day-to-day actions. I think in your day-to-day verbiage, I think it's how you carry yourself. You know, I don't need to walk around with, a huge cross on my chest so people know I'm a faith follower. I think when you see someone's actions and you see it in the day-to-day responses to different events and how you speak to people and how you lead people, it's evident and what's going on. And then there are opportunities, let's be honest. I mean, this whole can't mix faith and government. I mean, people get that all wrong. The history is different. We don't have time to even get into that. So that's never been a concern for me. And certainly I know that there's a lot of people that have appreciated that being brought into a situation or a mentorship type of area. So.
Oh yeah. No, I agree with you. I have the right person. I believe it is St. Francis of Assisi said, preach often. And when necessary, use words.
I love it. And it's so funny because, everybody says you have a book in you, right? You need to write a book. If you write down a story every day, you'll end up writing a book. And I know that you did author a book, but mine would be From Patrol to Pastor. Like that, when I retired, that is something that I would like to look at as a future for myself. And any opportunity that I can use that and use the foundational beliefs that have helped me get to where I'm at, I love to share that with other people. And I'm not one. I think that you know a little bit about my history. You know, if I get in trouble for it, I get in trouble for it. But that's who I am. That's what I am. I'm not willing to change who I am just because of a position or a badge that I wear.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. And that's I love the title.
Yeah,
From Patrol to Pastor.
I may need someone to ghostwrite it. Are you available in maybe a couple of years?
No, you don't need a ghostwriter. You just need someone to send you a text message once a week. Are you writing? That's what you need. Hey, how about, do you have any tough challenges now, today, sort of, in this, with regarding work-life balance and your self-care? Any challenges? You mentioned a little bit of your knee or some health.
I'd love for you to maybe do a podcast with somebody who doesn't have any challenges, and then please send them my way, because, you know, certainly in law enforcement now, you know, we're feeling a lot when it comes to civil unrest, the COVID, you know, the attacks on the police, defunding police, all those type things. So I coined something called Trailblazer Leadership. And what I mean by that is you have leaders in our profession that don't have people that you can rely on, mentors that have gone through this. You know, show me a leader now that's currently leading an organization, whether it's, you know, law enforcement or fire services, that has a playbook that's been left behind to deal with the global pandemic simultaneously while dealing with civil unrest and all those other things. So
yeah,
we're really the first people that had to address these things. And we really need to understand that it starts with us, right? I always ask my question, if not me, then who? So with that, I say it's us, and we're going to be really paving or trailblazing, you know, the leaders for us that follow us and what we're doing. So you have to take chances. You have to be able to do those things. So challenges, sure. There's challenges there. There's challenges with COVID, right? Yeah. You want to make sure you're not just that your personnel every day are safe when it comes to those type of environments, but what about your children? You know, what about your family members? What about your friends? You know, so mm-hmm. well, they had the constant challenges of that. But you know what? With all that's going on and all this season that we're going through, I'm so blessed to be able to be a leader in this position and be able to blessed to be able to do the things that we're doing with first responders, you know, with what you're doing. You know, so I look at all those things, and I'll add one other thing, and it's going to be kind of odd, and it helps with the work-life balance. But at 50 something, I'm not going to share how much, but at 50 something year old person, I decided in the middle of COVID, I'm not going to sit here and listen to this anymore and just sit caged in. I went out and took a motorcycle riding class, got certified, and went out and bought a Indian Chief motorcycle. And every weekend I go out, and that's kind of my safe space. And every Sunday I go on a prayer ride, and it's really kind of kept me balanced, you know, using your term.
That is awesome. Yeah. I fall in the same age group, and
and we don't look a day over 49, right?
Not at all. Not at all. That's right. I still think like I'm. Sometimes I wonder.
I'm not saying what I act. I'm saying this: how old I am.
That's right. That's right. Let me take you back to as a leader. Couple things. One, I absolutely want to talk about, I see it on your wall behind you in your office, the Asher model that is a piece that you pulled together from, named after, as I read about a police officer that you worked with. Could you go a little bit into that and about, you know, how that Asher model, how you're proactively using that in your teachings?
Yeah, I appreciate it, Dr. Donnie. Thanks for bringing that up. And something I'm very proud that of the results of what it came out with. But I always tell people I'm not a literary genius. I don't come from the field of academia. It's just 30 years of seeing things and going through things. And, you know, back in 1997, a gentleman, Asher Rosinski, down in Pembroke Pines, Florida, took his own life. And the story behind it is where it was a gentleman I was friends with. I went to the academy with this gentleman. I went to, was in his wedding. Just out of the blue, there was no really red flags that we could see. And I got a call at 3 a.m. and had a buddy of mine screaming on the phone that Asher is dead. Asher is dead. And then he says it one more time, Asher is dead. And I'm thinking to myself, whoa, what's going on? And I kind of just sat there. And it took a little while to sink in. I'm like, okay, well, this gentleman worked a lot of overtime shifts, worked a lot of off-duty shifts. And I figured maybe, you know, this is what we do. We put our lives on the line for people, right? We're public servants. That's what we do. And I figured that's how he lost his own life. But no, it's later on in the conversation, he told me that he took his own life. And what he did is he pulled his police car over to the center of the edge of the Everglades, and proceeded to take out his firearm and shoot himself in the chest and took his own life. So the most profound thing in my career that I could even say is what happened the next day when we went back to work, and that was nothing. Nothing happened. Yeah. And I remember walking out of that building and certainly saying to myself, no, this is not good. And this is not what's good for our profession. And if I ever get a chance to change it, I will. And that's kind of what led me to where I am today. And, you know, it's taken many, many years to be able to share that story and to make, I call it turning tragedy into hope. And certainly that's what we did. So, you know, I got asked, I met David Dr. Black, and I saw a presentation about his Cortico Wellness app. And, you know, he was talking to me a little bit and I told him about that story and he said, you got to put it on paper. And I go, I'm not a writer. I don't do that. But like you probably, I pray a lot. And the other thing I do is I have a pad and pen near my bed every night. Well, at 3 a.m, the Lord put something on my heart. I woke up and I wrote that entire article and that entire piece, including the model, within about 15, 20 minutes. That's it. And really, that was all about it. It was definitely the work of the Lord putting something on my heart to share with other people and hopefully turn tragedy into hope.
Yes. That gives me the chills listening to it, man. But I know exactly what I know exactly what you mean, those wake ups in the middle of the night.
Yeah, I learned a long time ago that if you don't have a pad and pen to be able to scribe something down, that you're quickly going to spend the whole rest of your next day trying to figure out what it was.
You're absolutely right. You should see how many I run and I'm listening to music or a podcast. And but then a thought hits me right when I'm out on my run every other day. And you should see the number of text messages I send myself. That's how I capture. So I don't, because I learned my lesson. Oh, I'll remember that. I'll get back to my home office. I'll write it down.
Nope. Oh, I've had some great ideas that I just can't remember what they are right now.
That's right. Yeah. So how about when you're being the chief, how many police officers and staff and everyone are you supervising?
So Pinole Police Department has 28 sworn and we have about 55 total, including non-sworn dispatchers, records clerks, and ID people. So we're a family of about 55. And I call it a family because that's exactly what it is here. We're a small group of people that go through things together, share experiences with each other, and certainly share resources with each other. And the most important part of that component is, you know, the guy in the ivory tower, right? If I'm not doing it, then it's just programmed. So it has to be a culture of that in your organization. So we consider it a culture of wellness in our organization. And it has to start with your leaders, right?
Absolutely. All eyes are on you. Yep. I teach that frequently, that and when eyes are on the leaders at first, of course, they're not trying to catch you doing something right. You know,
absolutely.
When you're trying to make that change, when you're trying to change that culture, they're looking
for that. And that's where it comes from, the same philosophy. I always ask myself, and if not me, then who? So if I'm not going to do this, if I'm not going to change a culture, who's going to do that? And not just in everything, in almost everything I do. So it all starts with us, right? Me. And that's kind of been my perspective for a really, really long time. And I think it's fared well and it's given me a good perspective.
Yeah.
And certainly humbles you because you realize that you're not delegating, you're doing. And that's two different types of leadership.
Yes. And you've talked a little bit, Chief, about the exercise component. How has nutrition played a part in your life when you think about those other physical needs, and as well as your mental health? You know, what do you do to keep help build your own resiliency and keep yourself strong in all areas? Part of that Asher model, I know,
Yeah, it's one of the points in the Asher model, but I don't want to keep preaching the Asher model because this is work-life balance podcast. So when you come on mine, then we'll do that.
Yeah.
No, but I think nutrition plays a huge part. And again, that all starts back, when you're playing, high school and college football, right? You want to eat right because you want to be able to perform at your peak, and you learn quickly that nutrition plays a huge part in that. And, I'll show you the guy with the best genetics in the world. If he's not eating right and his nutrition's not sound, you're not getting on the stage anywhere. Yeah. And I learned that a long time ago I used to work out with two gentlemen, you'll know now because we're on our age, but a guy named Rich Gasparri, which I'm sure you know.
Yeah.
Who I used to train with. And also a guy by the name of Vince Taylor out of South Florida. So those guys taught me a lot and taught me a lot about nutrition and really, I probably won't share the discussions we had privately, but certainly I don't care what kind of drugs are out there. I don't care what kind of how heavy you're lifting. They really told me that it was all about nutrition. They really, really educated me on how important that was. So that's always been a big part of my life, nutrition.
Has it?
And I forgot your second half of that type of lead-in that you had for me. I apologize.
The attrition, and then also the mental health component, keeping building your own resiliency, and how do you keep from packing deep down in that subconscious of yours all the experiences that, you know, throughout your career and I'm no expert in the mental health component at all, but, you know, I understand it's cumulative, or, you know, a lot of thoughts are that it's cumulative, but how do you keep from suffering the way many do?
Well, I have two different theories, and you could share with me your perspectives on it. One, I think that certain people are just foundationally more resilient than others. I think you really, sometimes that's just the way your makeup is, and that's the way the Lord presents you. But I really think it's for me, it's always been about doing stuff outside of work, you know, with bodybuilding and working out or playing football or your children, whatever it is. It's always been an outlet for me that I was able to not carry that around, carry that weight with me, whether you're, you know, dropping your cortisol levels through working out or spending time with your family. But even more so now, over the last year and a half, particularly with everything that's going on, speaking and doing webinars and talking about Asher and talking about that has been so therapeutic. And really, I think it's been a real big part of building my resiliency.
That's outstanding. Now, how do you, with the 55 total staff that you have, do you get concerned if you see someone you're thinking, when I say out of balance, I mean, they're letting themselves, maybe the nutrition's going, their weight's constantly climbing, or they're really stressed at home, arguing. And as you know, when you've been through it, if things aren't going well at home, that has a tendency to come into the work, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And how do you go about, as a leader, you know, keeping your finger on that pulse, and then, working with an individual, you know, how do you approach that with them?
Well, so there's a couple of things, and you know, we all started out in law enforcement, you know, back in the 80s, it was like, you leave your personal life at home and your work life here, and you don't let that mix. Well, clearly it comes very, very quickly to that doesn't happen, right? It's impossible to do that. Yeah. So for me, it's almost like an image of the yin and yang. They interact with each other at all times. So you have to understand that. And certainly we teach here that if you start seeing red flags here, performance issues dropping, you see maybe conduct issues going around the police department, personal hygiene, uniform, that there's going to be some tie-in. And when I speak, I have a model that I show, and it really shows the Office of Wellness is at the core of everything you do. And then I have spokes that come out, and it goes to relationships, it goes to attitude, it goes to performance, because what we may want to address as leaders is the outside scope, because that's easy, right? But really, we're called now to delve deeper into what's causing that. So we're not looking at, you know, the tip of the iceberg, but we need to get to the bottom where most of the important stuff is going on. Yeah. So I think creating a culture, educating our people with that, giving them resources like the app where 24/7, 365, anonymously and confidentially, they can get resources, they can educate themselves. And then, of course, having a chief and a command staff that goes out and shares their stories and is willing to have those conversations with people. I'll share a story with you. Just yesterday, I found out that one of our dispatchers lost their father. Well, you know, am I waiting for them to come back to work to see if they need anything? No, the chief of police is sending them a text. Do you need anything? Our condolences with you and your family. Yeah. You know, it's those day-to-day activities and those day-to-day interactions that really are the most impactful. It's not some big program that you just throw together so you can tell everybody and you feel good about yourself that you have a program. It's about the day-to-day individual actions, individual contacts that you have with your employees.
Absolutely. Oh, that is wonderful. Let me ask you, Chief, what do you need to do now that you might not be able to do in a couple years from now, because a window of time's closing?
I think that's a great question. And I share this too. And I'm glad I don't have to sit there with a bunch of silence on your podcast right now. but lead people. you know, we have the such a short time as a chief. Our opportunity as chiefs are anywhere from 2 to 3 years. That's the average. So we're like milk. We expire very, very quickly. So yeah. I only have a small amount of time to impact people and to change lives and to help them become successful in their careers. And not just their careers, because that's important to me, but just their lives in general. So again, the window of opportunity to be able to lead, to have the blessing and the foundation to lead people is so short that that's what maybe in the future, I will not have that opportunity.
Yeah. What comes after being chief?
You know,
what are you looking forward to?
Finding a new ways to impact people. You know, I don't see the end of the road yet. Now people, you know, around my age are all retiring. Well, I came into a system out in PERS, which is out in California, where you have to be 57 before you can retire out here. Well, I'm not 57 yet. I got several more years left. So I think that the Lord still has more for me to do. I think he has another platform. It may not be the current platform I'm in, to help impact people and to help change lives. And that's kind of what I want to do. And, you know, and I talked after, maybe when you hang up the badge, certainly going into a field where I could pastor a church would be something that really, really interests me.
Oh, yeah. That's very nice. Well, as I'm winding this down, I should ask you, I always like to try to ask my guest, is there anything that I did not ask you that you'd like for me to, or an area that you'd like to spend more time on?
No, I think I shared a little bit about finding ways for outlets, healthy outlets, particularly in law enforcement. And, you know, not everybody at 50 something years old is going to go out and buy the largest bike on the market and go and start riding motorcycles. But you could do, you know, find your own motorcycle, you know, find your own vice of what that looks like, whether it's hiking, you know, whether it's going out and doing new challenges for yourself. Because, you know, the adrenaline at work, you need to have a little bit of that at home and whatever that may look like, but it needs to be healthy. It can't be alcohol. It can't be extramarital affairs. It can't be things like that. Find vices. And mine was a motorcycle. You know, yours may be horseback riding, maybe things that you've never done before, but don't be afraid to take a challenge, to take a leap of faith, right? To do something different, because you'd be amazed at what you could do if you just, you know, give fear to the Lord and try something different.
I have to write that down. Give fear to the Lord.
I'm calling somebody to get that copyrighted.
Yeah, that's right. You talk and you mentioned a lot about doing things outside of the badge and outside of, you know, those hobbies and the different things. And I know from a little bit more from the firefighting side, I know that a lot of guys, they struggle a lot because if they fail to do that and then they hit retirement and then they go home, they don't know what to do. And it's not usually a pretty outcome, you know. There's a lot of struggle with that. And I think that's something that, would that be, I imagine that would be advice that you would give younger, whether it's law enforcement or firefighting, emergency med, but just younger first responders would be, is to, you know, go develop some of those hobbies. Would you say that's a good piece of advice?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And the what we're seeing, the rising numbers of suicides in our profession are retirees.
Yeah.
You know, they're a year or two out and, you know, quickly, you know, you're outside the profession and you're not getting the calls anymore and you're not getting invited to the different events. So the adrenaline's not there. So what we started doing in our organization was starting to educate people around the 20-year mark of what that's going to look like. Hmm. Are you financially sound to even be okay to retire? You know, what's going to look like when you don't have, you know, that hot tone, that call for service, when you don't have this quote unquote family, this blue family you've had. So yeah. Developing yourself. So I always tell people, don't worry about being officer gang, you know, go out and be Neil gang, you know, and share that with them, because that's, you can't identify yourself with this badge, because in the end, you're going to end up falling short of reaching your potential when you're out of this career, because you're going to wrap yourself up into your identity of what you do instead of who you are.
Absolutely. And Neil, I wanted to ask you, what's that? I see a picture behind you over your other shoulder. Bikes. Yes. What am I looking at there? I can't quite see it.
This here?
Yes.
So this is the old Norman Rockwell.
Oh, I see it now.
Painting
yes.
of the police officer and the child, the runaway. That's it's yes. called, actually called the runaway. And the reason why I have this here is actually I just put it up for your show. No, I'm just kidding. because when I look back, that's what a police officer is supposed to be, right? Someone to help somebody, to be a resource. Yeah. I think we get so caught up in everything that's going on politically that we forget we're public servants. And it's funny, if you look back in Sir Robert Peel back in the 1800s, got it right. And he talked about public servants. It talked about you have to work with your communities. This is a guy in the 1800s. Why can't we figure it out in 2020? So having that here, I find different ways to humble myself. And I look at that and I go, Norman Rockwell knew back when this was painted back in the 50s. So this is what we're doing now. Now, today's picture, would that guy wouldn't even talk to that guy in blue? That's what worries me about our profession. That runaway may not want to go and talk to this officer and ask for help. You know why? Because when I'm walking around with my mom and dad as a little kid now, what's the thing they say to you when they walk by a police officer? You better behave yourself or that guy's going to take you away.
Yeah.
And that's the wrong image. And that's the reason why that picture is so important to me.
Oh, yeah. No. I know exactly what you're talking about in that sense.
Can't tell you how many times I used to work an off-duty job in the mall back in South Florida. If I had a dollar for every single time a mom and dad had a kid that was acting up and going, you better pay attention or you better listen to me or those guys are going to take you away. Well, what do you think foundationally that's going to set their mindset when they perhaps need us?
Yeah.
And I stopped them and I would say, mom and dad, don't do that to them. And I'd say, that's not what we're here for. We're here if you need anything and if you need help, you come find one of us. But you have to pass that message on. And that's why that picture is so important to me, because I'm not sure 2020 that picture would be the same.
No, I agree with you. Yeah. It was I'll share a little thing with you is that where I grew up in an extremely poor section of the city, and I would see you guys, law enforcement, and I'd see the firefighters and, you know, ambulance and all that down in the apartments, literally every day in the summer, every day, doing some kind of run, whether it's a drug overdose to, seeing 6-month-old baby murdered to friend's brother, 12 years old, 2 shots in the head, stuff like that. Just as a kid, witnessed so much bad stuff and saw more than I ever wanted to see as a kid and all of that. But one thing I never had it to where I never thought in my mind though that, hey, you are the bad guys. I always thought in my mind was, no man, you're the good guys that come down. And I know where all those bad which apartments are the bad ones, which apartments that, you know, you can smell the drugs, you can see the activity going on and all that kind of stuff. And even when we were out in the field and you guys must have had a warrant on someone, but yelling at us to, you know, face down on the ground because they thought bullets were going to fly, you know, they're trying to protect us. You know, the kids are out there trying to play a baseball game. And, I think that is where many, many, many years later, I got the love and the passion and the drive to be serving this industry and could not be more proud of it to come back.
And honestly, our profession is better because of your decision, to be honest with you. I think it's important now more than ever that any first responder listening understands that there is a silent majority that really values them, needs them, wants them out there, and don't get caught up in all the white noise that's going on. This is a season, we'll get through it. We do need to change. Our profession needs to change, but we're gonna change for the better. We'll be stronger because of it, but we're all gonna get through this together. But they're valued, they're needed, and certainly more than ever, much, much appreciated.
Yes, they absolutely are. And with that said, Neil, I would like, this is just an invitation. If you would like to close the program out with a blessing to law enforcement and first responders.
Yeah, that'd be great. And you're okay with that. I know we're crossing over government and religion here, you know.
Hey, the only one I need to argue with is the man in the mirror, so I'm good to go.
Well, certainly, Father God, thank you very much for this opportunity to spend time with Dr. Donnie. He's such a blessing to the profession and blessing to everybody who's listening on his podcast today. I ask that you put a hedge of protection around him and what he's doing, that he goes out there and he serves the public and people are able to change their lives and understand what work-life balance means. And I ask, Lord, that you put a hedge of protection around the entire profession, as an entire profession of law enforcement is going through a difficult season, as you already know, because your hands are in this. But we face a pandemic, a global pandemic, along with civil unrest. Many of the officers are uncertain about what they see. They're uncertain with their mental stability. I ask that you help them today. Put your healing hands in them, Lord, as you make them stronger and better as we all get through this together. And I ask this all in your Son Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Hey, if you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or EMS professional who enjoys this podcast and would like some help with your work-life balance, you need to check out my Get Balanced program. Not sure if you are balanced or not? Join me over at DonnieHutchinson.com and take the quiz. Together, we are going to get you balanced.